Well, the scoreboard said I lost today, but what the scoreboard doesn't say is what it is I have found.
Hello and welcome back to the Tennis Connected Studios for July 9th, 2017. I'm Nima Naderi alongside Parsa Sammy, and we're here this week to preview week two at Wimbledon. This week's podcast is brought to you by Grand Slam Tennis Tours. For anyone looking to get down to the U.S. Open next month in Flushing Meadows, make sure to hit them up for all your ticket and traveling needs. Let's introduce this week's co-host, Parsa. How are you, my friend?
Doing very well. What's going on?
Pretty good. You know, rocking and rolling, getting ready for tomorrow. Manic Monday, the most exciting day of tennis on the calendar. You have all 16 men and women in action. Can't beat that. So it's going to be wall-to-wall coverage. Make sure everybody's got the day off and you know, ready with that popcorn and your beverage of choice to, watch, some fantastic tennis. So Parsa, as we, getting ready for week two, Wimbledon, very strange year for me, Parsa, in the Grand Slam calendar. I mean, we just had the French Open wrap up last month. We have Wimbledon going very late into July. I mean, it's going to have like, a 16th, 17th finale. Then on the 28th of August, which is only 5 weeks away after that, U.S. Open starts. So within all of that time, we got to cram in, the U.S. Open series, Rogers Cup, Cincinnati. It's a lot of stuff coming up, right? So, everybody's going to be ready for that. But I kind of question if it's a little bit too condensed for my liking. You know what I mean? I would really like to see, maybe 6 weeks, 7 weeks leading into the U.S. Open to really build it up instead of kind of like, compressing it so much that it's all one after another. But and then it's done basically and then it kind of shuts down until the Australian Open more or less. So, I mean, for me, I would have liked to have seen a little bit more spread out, but I guess this is kind of the pattern that we're going to see, with the tour calendar, going forward. Do you have any thoughts on that quickly before we get into week two?
Yeah, I mean, ultimately what's proven is that the buildups are really good. The buildup before Wimbledon is slow, it's slower than in the past, and I think it's been a benefit to the tournament. I think it's been a well-played tournament so far, which we'll get into shortly. Mm-hmm. At the same time, I think that the build-up to the U.S. Open's got a lot of major events in a short, condensed time. So you're going to see some maybe opportunities for guys who don't normally pick up big points to get points, and you're going to see some, Djokovic will play this week and Nadal won't, and then Nadal will play the following week and Djokovic won't. And so you're not going to get the best going on. That could be a good thing in that once it gets to U.S. Open, you get everybody under one tournament title. Maybe fireworks are going to happen. Who knows? But I guess it is what it is. The tennis schedule has improved over the years, but it's a continued work in progress. It's not an easy thing.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. And like I said, I'm just hoping for some great tennis, especially during the hard courts, both of us being obviously in North America. There's a lot of coverage, for us definitely to do, and something that's closer to us, and especially from a time zone perspective. I've been waking up every day 5-6 o'clock in the morning for the last 2 months now, covering all these matches, looking forward to getting to a point where it's everything's like 11 o'clock, 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, start time for matches. A lot easier on the body, but I'll stop complaining and let's get into some tennis here, Parsa. So we've had once again, just like how we saw in the first week of the French, we've had some emotional times at Wimbledon. First week we had obviously Maddox Sands with that horrific injury that she sustained against Kristea in her match, where she just completely fell to the ground, ruptured and blew out her knee, and we wish her well for sure, and that was very sad to see. I really like, everybody has, come to her her need and really supported her through this. And we hope that she, you know, she's back in action very, very soon. We had Steve Johnson, obviously, who's still, you know, dealing with the recent passing of his father. He lost to Cilic in the third round, and you could see him like very emotional at the end of that match. And, you know, Cilic was very, you know, compassionate towards that. And then on subsequently, we've had, you know, a guy like Nick Kyrgios, who, you know, still struggling with some knee injuries, very stoic, you know, in his first round retirement against Huber. And then he was later on seen, you know, at nightclubs partying with a couple girls. And now he's back in Australia rehabbing. So we'll see how he gets ready, because he's got a lot of points to defend coming up into the US Open series, winning Atlanta and then US Open third round. And then I believe he won Japan. So he's got some points coming off there. And then another Australian who we should definitely talk about is Bernard Tomic, who completely tanked his first round match, said he was bored, said he was not interested. He's going to play tennis for another 10 years. He won't have to work another day after that. And it was part of, you know, we really want to talk about this one because, you know, I completely support Tomic. And people are going to say, what is Nima talking about, right? And let me explain that for a second. So you have a guy, okay? There's so many tennis players out there. I mean, I've known so many guys here in Canada. I'm not going to name their names, but I knew a couple guys, super talented. They couldn't get out of, you know, the 450, 500 range. Party guys going out, doing all this stuff. You don't think they would love to have Bernard Tomic's career? Already made over $10 million, be a top 20 player, all of these things. You know, at the end of the day, if in a sport like tennis, and this is my main argument, Parsa, where there's no salary, right? You got to earn every cent that you make on court, right? You show up, obviously, if your ranking's good enough, you're going to get the first round prize money. If you keep going, you know, you're going to get paid and so on and so forth. More sponsors will come and all that. If you do it, you do it. You got to grind, you do futures, you do satellites, you do challengers, then you get up. Same with the women's, you know, they go through the ITFs and all of that stuff until they get to the main tour. If you can do it, and that's it, you know, you're in the tournament, you do what you do, man. Like, who's going to really, you know, say, listen, you have to give 100%. You don't have to give 100%. He's earned the right to be in that tournament. Now his ranking is going to drop. So he's going to have to go play challengers. He's not going to get direct entry into these tournaments. So it's going to be interesting to see how it goes. But in any walk of life, how many people do you know that don't give 100% towards their job? They're just doing it for money. They're just doing it because it's a job. I mean, I read this really good article last night before I went to sleep about Kyrgios in the New Yorker. Same kind of effect. You know, this lady was traveling with him through Nice and all the warm-up tournaments to the French, as well as the French Open and even London. And basically he was saying that, you know, he lost to Nicholas Kicker in Lyon before that warm-up tournament the week before the French. And he was like, yeah, no big deal in the hotel and it's all good. And he's like, you know, I don't love the sport. I'm just here, you know, make money, and it's easy money for me, because obviously the guy's super talented and he has enough at this point to remain a top 50 player, arguably for the rest of his career. Right? He's got a massive serve. He's super athletic and he's got really good hands. So what? I mean, he's going to make, you know, $200,000-$500,000 a year for the next 10 years. He's like, it's either that or I go work at Chipotle, right? He's not a very educated guy. And I'm not saying that in a bad way. He didn't go to university. I'm not even sure he finished high school. So for him to be an international tennis player, same with Tomic, you know, making all of this money, do we really expect all of these guys to be Roger Federer? You know what I'm saying? And to be a Novak Djokovic and be, you know, have honey in the morning with, you know, room temperature water and 10 physios and all of this stuff. I really don't, man. I mean, and it's good to have a couple of these guys because it gets that parity going, right? So, you know, I'd love to hear, you know, your thoughts on this overall.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of Tomic, I mean, it's pretty much an embarrassment. Although it could be a very, very, very straightforward and honest type of interview that he, or press conference that he had,
for sure,
it does give you a little bit of insight into what the mindset is like and where he's trying to go. He's not trying to be great. And so, you know, we all watch sports because, one, it's probably something most of us can't do. Two,
yes,
it's something that we dream of. Three, it's exciting and entertaining. Four, we get to see people push themselves to the absolute limit, and that's what is attractive about sport in general.
Yes.
in really anything that you watch in terms of competition is you want to see two people go at it as hard as possible. So when you hear somebody's bored or not always going to be putting forth the correct effort, again, it comes down to that Dimitrov US Open match for me.
Yes.
People are paying very good money to support your career, and it's such a selfish thing to say, and it's really such a selfish thing to do, to not give it your all, because you are going to live a privileged life and you are going to probably not work after the 10 more years you're on tour. And so it's a very, very immature, very spoiled, very frankly disgusting thing that he says, and I absolutely do not agree with it. I think it's disgraceful. And I'm not talking about for tennis or for anything. Tennis has got a lot of guys trying to achieve history, and
yes,
they're the pinnacle of the sport. But these guys are just stragglers and has-beens or whatever way you want to look at them, that they won't make the most of what they have, and they'll get spit out by the machine. No big deal.
Yeah, Parsa, the best example I can come up with, something that's very close to us, is through our coaching careers, right? You've had guys that you've worked with, we're not obviously naming any names here at all, same with myself, and you're looking over at the next court while you're doing a lesson, and one of these guys is on a cell phone or doing this, doing that, not giving 100%, picking up balls for half of the lesson, whatever it is, but they're still out there making money, people still want to take lessons with them, right? And they're still making a living. Now, I can tell you from, seeing it firsthand, as well as through a lot of feedback that, for instance, and I'll say it because I'm saying it, you're not saying it. I know Parsa is a fantastic coach, and I've seen that with my own eyes, as well as, through a lot of other people's. You obviously deserve everything that you have. But there's a lot of guys out there, maybe they don't get to your level, right? But they're still going to do okay. They're still, until the day somebody comes up to them and says, listen, you know what? You're done. We don't need you here anymore. They're going to keep doing what they're doing, right? And it's the same thing with Tomic, right? Like, the ATP has to come in, or the ITF, or whoever the governing body is for that particular event or period of the year that he's in, to say, listen, man, this is not going to cut it anymore. You're done. You want to play for 10 more years and make $400,000 or $500,000 a year. Okay, well, you're gonna have to give this percentage of an effort. If you don't, you're done. We don't even want you to play anymore. If they do that, okay, they're doing that. But at the end of the day, they're letting this guy play. They're letting Kyrgios play. And that's it. You even look at a guy like Marcelo Rios. He got to number one in the world finals of a slam. Did he really look like he cared? How talented was he? You know what I mean? Like, it goes back to, when we were younger. But it didn't look like he really wanted to be out there. Safin won a couple slams. Again, it was arguable how much he really put into the game with his immense talent, right? This is always going to go back and forth, right? But these guys are still making money. As an example, right, Head Rackets just dumped him, Tomic. They said, listen, we don't want this guy anymore with that type of an attitude. He gave a fair assessment. He's done. He's going to probably either have some blacked out frames, or I would be shocked if somebody else doesn't pick him up, like a Yonex, like a Babylon, like a Wilson, because he's still a talented guy. He's going to be around. He gets buzz because of his personality. Same with the Kyrgios. And then it is what it is. So you have to appreciate the honesty. And for me, the biggest X factor here, Parsa, is if he was getting a salary, let's say based on your ranking or your credentials, you would get 500 grand a year, a million a year, 10 million a year if you're like Federer, Nadal level. That's different. You deserve to produce differently, like a LeBron James does, like a Steph Curry does, like a player of that caliber. But when you're out there having to earn your own salary, like we do as tennis coaches, if somebody doesn't like what you're doing, either they can stop working with you, or somebody like, a club owner or somebody's going to tell you you're done. Otherwise, I really don't think there's a big problem with what he's doing, because it's within the rules and nobody's telling him to do otherwise. So that's my final assessment on that before we get into the actual draw here. I don't know if you have any closing words or whatever. But
yeah, no, I mean, well said. It's, until it gets to a point where it's no longer accepted, I guess that's what's going to happen,
Exactly.
But, I still expect more from these guys. And
I completely agree with that, too. I'm not saying I don't expect anything, but I think he's within his rights to do what he's doing. That's what I'm saying overall. And you see it throughout every walk of life in any profession. Not everybody's giving 100% at their jobs, but I've known people that have had really good jobs, and they'll tell me right now they don't even care about their jobs, and they've been there for 20 years, making amazing money. So, I mean, like I said, there's nothing. The only difference is, like you said, we look at sports as an outlet. You go to work, I go to work. We were like, okay, now we want to see what this guy's doing, or this athlete, or this musician, or whatever. And we're expecting to be entertained. We're paying money, or we're watching it, or whatever we're doing. And, you know, that's what it is. But again, I there's that part of me that says, I think he's allowed to do what he's doing. That's all I'm saying. So, anyhow, getting right into the draw parts of tomorrow. Awesome day of tennis. And you can bet that, you know, a lot of these guys that we're going to mention are going to give 150%. Let's go briefly recap and preview all of this, the matches for the round of 16 for men and women before we sign off for this week. So let's start right at the top. We got Andy Murray, Benoit Paire. We have Murray, obviously, he had a tough one with Fognini in the last round. Fognini, another, you know, flaky guy, but what a shot maker he is. He's got another guy in Benoit Paire coming up. And, you know, when you look at this matchup, Paire's got one of the best two-handers in the world. Looks like he's got, you know, he's taking it a little bit more seriously in the fourth round here, so he's got to be doing something right. His forehand, still to me, is one of the worst forehands on the men's tour. Serve is good. He's got amazing hands. Can he in any way trouble Murray in this match, in your opinion?
I mean, no. How about that?
Yeah,
Murray's a master technician and yes. Somebody who is going to break down a weakness, and Paire has got one.
Yes.
And so over time, you know, maybe he can get a set Paire, but unlikely. Murray's probably playing well enough to give himself a chance and, you know, in every set, meaning, and I think that'll be good enough to go straight sets through that one.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. Moving on to stateside, we've got Sam Querrey, fourth round, again for the second straight year. After last year, he defeated Djokovic. He's in with a real chance against Kevin Anderson. Really like the evolution of Querrey. If, you know, for our fans out there, if you remember a couple years back, we were talking about the one-dimensional factor of Querrey. He definitely still has that, but what I think he's doing really well is he's really magnifying his strengths, which is an absolutely massive forehand, massive serve, and he's really improved his backhand. And I think if he starts taking some bigger cuts on the return of serve, he's a big guy, but he's a great athlete. You know, as we know, he won Acapulco earlier this year. He played amazing. He beat Kyrgios there. He beat Nadal. You know, he's beat Djokovic at Wimbledon last year. So he's really starting to come into his own. And if he can get by Anderson, which is not a gimme for me, this is a 50-50 match. Very similar game styles. Two big guys. Very, you know, surf and turf. You got the forehand big serve combination. If he can get by Anderson, I think he's got a real shot against Murray in the quarters. You know, quick summary. How do you feel about this matchup going forward for tomorrow?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a great one. I think it's something that can go five and a chance for either guy to make a name for themselves. You know, that's how I feel about it. How about that?
Yeah, and I think that, I mean, we would definitely love to see, you know, Querrey go forward just from, you know, the American standpoint. Good for the game, good for, you know, the ratings stateside. So we'll see how that transpires. But give credit to Kevin Anderson. I mean, second straight slam where he's made the fourth round. You know, and, Fred, you know, Clay's obviously not even his best service, but he was in the fourth round there. And, you know, once again, in SW19. Next one, going to be a good one here. We got Rafa Nadal playing Parsa. I mean, amazing tennis right now. I mean, we could talk, you know, another hour about how well Nadal's playing. He's playing against Gilles Muller, who is about as rough of a grass court customer that you could, you know, face. And he's given Nadal trouble in the past. Are we going to see, definitely Nadal is going to win this match. But is it going to be a four or five setter? Or is Nadal playing well enough, in your opinion, to get by, you know, Gilles in straight sets?
Yeah, I mean, it's most likely going to be straight sets.
Okay.
Now, Mueller obviously is very dangerous and can move the ball with his serve. But I just think that Nadal will be the one that, to give you an example, he'll be holding every time. And on Mueller's serve, he won't be breaking him every time, but he'll have chances. He'll be getting to 40-30 and whatever. And so even if it goes to a tiebreak, it's going to be a 7-3, 7-4, 7-5 type tiebreak.
Yes.
I look for maybe a tiebreak and maybe even two tiebreaks and a 6-4 or 7-5, something like that.
Yeah. I got Rafa moving through, but I think it's going to be a good one. And then we have, RBA, Roberto Bautista Agut, once again in the latter stages of a Grand Slam to face, guys that I have actually going to the semis, which would mean that he would defeat Nadal in a potential quarterfinal match, and that's Marin Cilic. Love what he's doing. I mean, Parsa, I don't know how much you've been following what Cilic has been doing this event, but serving numbers off the charts. I mean, he literally took the racket out of Steve Johnson's hand, who's a very good grass courter in his own right. I mean, this guy is just playing so confident. He made the finals in Queens. That rhythm that he has on that serve, he's just, every match and every day, just to me, looks like he's playing with house money. He's in such a comfortable place in his career, similarly to Kuznetsova on the women's side, where I really don't think Cilic has anything to prove for the remainder of his career. I mean, he's just coming in and feeling good, and, this is all gravy for him, and he definitely believes that he has another slam in him, and grass is a great surface for what he has to offer, and for that reason, I think this is going to be a tough one, because Bautista Agut gives you absolutely nothing. He's a super professional guy, gives you 100% every single day, but I still see Cilic getting through in four sets. That's my call. What do you have on that one?
Yeah, I mean, Cilic does look very comfortable, very in control, and, no problems are happening, but I think he's going to be playing a different guy in Bautista Agut, so I think a 4 or 5 set is a good assessment. I do think Cilic will get through that, but it remains to be seen. Bautista Agut is, maybe he's going to use every ounce of his experience to get through this one. It is a decent matchup for him, but I find I think Cilic will end up making it through in 4 or 5.
Yes, I'm right there with you. So we got next, Raonic versus Alex Zverev in a very interesting match. For me, this is going to come down to two things: strength and experience. And in both those categories, Milos is far and away better than Zverev. Saying that, there's only about 4 or 5 places between them in the rankings. Zverev did defeat him earlier this year on clay. Raonic is the defending finalist. Let's not forget that. He's also playing well. He beat Ramos Fornoles, who's predominantly a clay court player, but with the slower surfaces, everybody's playing well on the grass this year. How do you see this one developing? For me, still got to go with Raonic to get through, but I think that if Zverev can grab the first set, then it becomes interesting. If Milos grabs the first set, he could run away with it in 3. What are your thoughts?
I think that, I'm on a little bit the opposite of you.
Okay.
I think that Zverev has got more game, and I think he's proven that that he can win against big-time opponents, and I think this is just another step in his direction. I mean, he's more athletic version, not the same serve as Raonic and not the same experience, but I think he's got more overall athleticism, and I think he'll be holding serve himself.
Yes, absolutely,
So I look for him to be the one that has the opportunities to break more than Raonic, and it comes down to those big points and who's going to convert in those moments. So it's going to come down to really the Raonic serve against the break points of Zverev. And so depending on how Raonic plays those break points down, I think that's how it's going to determine the match. For me, I think it's Zverev's time. I think that he's going to be the one that's going to go get slayed by Federer in the next round.
Okay, well, that's going to be interesting to see. Moving on to the last 3 matches, we got Dimitrov versus Federer. I'm not going to really get too much into this one because I'm going Federer in straight sets for the following reasons. He's never lost to Dimitrov. Dimitrov respects Federer too much. They play a very similar game, and I don't think he matches up well with Federer. Federer was very respectful towards Grigor for obvious reasons. His company manages him, A. They're good friends, B. And obviously Federer is very respectful to everybody and said basically every time I play somebody, I know they're getting better. They've gained some more information from before. Dimitrov played really well, at the Australian Open earlier in the year. He almost beat Nadal to make the finals, which would have been a Federer-Dimitrov final. So So he does have a good point there, but I just feel that at this current state of the season and everything being considered, Federer playing way too well on this surface to lose to Grigor. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, Federer looks just masterclass. I mean, he should be teaching all these other professionals how to play tennis. That's how he looks to me.
Yeah.
You know, there's just no chance for Dimitrov. I don't know. You know, I don't know how, you know, he's had a very pleasant draw to this point, but it's going to be very unpleasant tomorrow.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. So we got Thiem versus Burdick, and this to me is a very interesting match because I would go back to 50-50 like to Query Anderson, but I really don't have a call here because Burdick, obviously his pedigree is much better on this surface than Thiem. But Thiem has shown that, you know, he can play well now on grass, and he's proven that now the last couple of years. And one very underestimated, you know, facet of Thiem's game, Parsa, is his serve. I mean, I don't know how many people are watching that the radar gun, but I mean, this guy's serving high 130s, low 140s. You know, I mean, just absolutely cracking the ball, massive ground strokes, super heavy shots all over the place. And I mean, Burdick's going to have his work cut out for him here. And I think if Thiem can have a high first serve percentage, I think at this point he's going to have a little bit more to offer on the surface than Burdick. But I can't discount Burdick because he hits a flatter ball and he's a better mover on this surface and he has more compact strokes, especially on the backhand, than Dominic. So for that reason, well, tough one for me, but I'm going to go Burdick, 5 sets. What do you have?
Very good.
Yeah.
Very tough to tell. You're right, because what you're finding with Thiem is a guy who struggled earlier on the grass and then now he's starting to find his range, and he seems to be a gamer. Obviously, he's a gamer. It's a big time tournament. He's going to be there and on his best behavior and trying to find his best game, regardless of how he's feeling out there. And so, you look at that and you say, okay, well, how does he match up with Burdick? And you know, he can't do the finessey type stuff that Burdick hates. And so,
yes,
I think you know, as I went earlier in the day, I'm sorry, earlier in our podcast, the preview podcast, it was really, I said Burdick in the quarters, I have to continue going that way because I think until he gets to the guy who can really upend him and give him what he doesn't like, I think he's sort of going to find a way to win. So I agree with you, Burdick in 4 or 5.
Okay, and moving on to our last match here, we have Adrian Mannarino, who defeated Mafi yesterday in 5. He defeated Sugita in the match before that in 5, who defeated him in the Turkey final over the weekend. So Mannarino in great form. This is his, without a question, best surface. Again, for many of you that are out there that follow us on Twitter and throughout this podcast and know me personally, you know that Mannarino's probably my favorite player to watch on the circuit. So nice to see him in the 4th round. He faces against Djokovic, who's been playing well, who's been building steam, has had, let's be honest, very easy draw up until this point. I mean, he played Galbis, who had, you know, some answers for him, especially in the 3rd set, but he got through Ernest, who defeated Del Potro. So he pretty much did, you know, Djokovic a favor because we know the titanic battles that Del Potro and Djokovic have had in the past, especially on grass and other surfaces. So Djokovic has had a pretty easy draw. I mean, to play Mannarino in the 4th round, as much as he's my favorite player, you have to say that, you know, he could not have asked for anything more to play Thiem and Burdick in the quarters. You know what I'm saying? So with all due respect to all of these guys, that's, to me, that's an excellent draw for Joker. And I think that for him to lose to Mannarino would be an absolute stunner. I think Mannarino's going to have to play 1,000% tennis, serve over 70%, hit his backhand cross-court about as well as he can. But I can't see this going any more than 3 sets, even though I would like to see it go more than 3 sets. I'd like to see Djokovic getting through. And Parsa, just want to get to, you know, first of all, your thoughts on that before we end off on the men's draw here.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great tournament for Mannarino so far. And for Djokovic, it seems like somebody may be picking up a little bit of steam here and sort of getting that belief back and probably having these amazing conversations with Agassi at dinner is probably helping quite a bit. It would help all of us, actually, to pick a guy like that's brain. And so let's see how he reacts. But it looks like a very, very good event for Djokovic going forward. And Mannarino's style is not going to be very conducive to upending Djokovic. He's not going to be fooled or played by any of the ups and the downs and the slices and all those kinds of things. Djokovic will just sort of calmly go about his business and do what he does, and Mannarino will have to be beyond the red line in order to upend him, and so I don't think it's going to happen. So Djokovic through for me.
Exactly. So now, Parso, this is the time where we have to reflect on our picks from last week's show. So I'll start with myself, see how we've done so far. I had Kyrgios, Cilic, Federer, Djokovic in the semis. Thus far, obviously, Kyrgios out first round, Cilic still in the event, Federer still in the event, Djokovic still in the event. For you, on the men's side, you had Wawrinka, lost first round. You had Nishikori, I believe, lost third round to RBA. You still got Federer, Djokovic in the draw. You had Federer winning the tournament?
Yes.
Yeah, and so do I, so we're still good there. I don't know. I mean, do you see anything else? As of now, who are you taking for your final four? I mean, for me, obviously, Kyrgios is out, so I'm going to have to, you know, trek back. Do I take Murray? I guess I have to at this stage. I mean, because he really has Pear, Anderson, and Querrey standing in his way of a final four appearance. He's far and away the best player from all those guys, so I got to go with Murray to take over my Kyrgios pick. I'm still going with Cilic to take out Nadal in the quarters. And I got Federer and Djokovic moving through still. I'm going to have a Murray-Cilic semi. I'm going to have Cilic getting through that, really believing in him this event. And then I have Fed taking out Djokovic. And then Federer is still defeating Cilic in straight sets in the finals. What's yours shaping up to be right now?
Yeah, so it looks like it's going to be a big four for me. A Murray-Nadal semifinal, and a Federer and Djokovic semifinal in the bottom. And I really, you know, as much as I want Federer to win, Nadal's got something going for me. And he just got his belief system is in a whole another stratosphere right now. I think he actually is the best player. And I think we're going to get a clash of those two guys in the final, who are the two players of 2017, to be honest with you. And I think we're looking at another epic Fadal encounter and something that's going to be quite exciting for us, and something in the range of a 6-4 in the fifth for Federer.
Oh, wow. That would be a mouth-watering proposition, so we'll see how that unfolds. Okay, Parso, so ending off our show, let's get into the women's draw here. We have Kerber Muguruza as the top seeds. Sorry, before we break that down, let's get into our picks so everybody knows what we had going in. I had Safarova, Pliskova, Svitolina, and Kvitova as my final four. You had Radwanska, Pliskova, Ostapenko, and Kvitova. So I only have one of my four remaining with Svitolina. You have two of your four remaining with Radwanska and Ostapenko. So before we get in, now back to the draw here. So we have Kerber, Muguruza, two former Grand Slam winners. Wow, I mean, for me, Kerber has been, you know, clawing and scratching to get to this stage. Muguruza has been cruising, playing really well. For me, I'm going Muguruza all the way here, straight sets into the quarters. What do you have on this one?
Yeah, oof. I have to go with my original in Radwanska.
No, but you got it. We're talking about the Kerber Muguruza match.
Oh, my bad.
Yeah.
You know, so wow. I mean, Kerber Muguruza. Yikes. You know, just difficult. You know, how about that? But you know, I like Kerber's ability to deflect. The pace is going to be coming at her, and so she's not going to have to be doing too much. But it really comes down to how she serves. Which hasn't been hot thus far, but has been competing well, which is, you know, what you expect from a number one. You know, I can't see Muguruza. You know, I can't rely on her, and for that reason, I'm going to have Kerber going through.
Okay, we got Radwanska and Kuznetsova. Again, Kuznetsova, like a Cilic, playing with house money at this point of her career. She said, I have nothing more to prove. I've won two majors. You know, she's enjoying a renaissance in her career. Radwanska, former finalist here, loves the grass, playing well. And again, I think this is going to be a close one. You know, ranking-wise, everything-wise. On this surface, you got to give a touch favorite, I do believe, to Radwanska. And I'm going to take her in a pretty tight one, but three sets, Radwanska going through. What do you have?
Yeah, I think it's also going to be very difficult and very challenging. And Radwanska's been finding a way in each match, and I think she's going to continue. And I think this bodes well for her. If she can beat Kuznetsova, look out. This thing may actually happen. And so I have her going through also again in three sets.
Yeah, and you know, Brad Gilbert had a great point on ESPN's coverage. He said all 16 women can win this tournament. I mean, if that's the case, how wide open can, you know, can't get much more wide open than everybody left in the draw can win the tournament. Next, we got Rybakova, who defeated Pliskova earlier in the event against Martic, who's a young Croatian player who's come back for some injuries. I know her story pretty well. She's been training with the Alexander Waski Tennis University in Offenbach, Germany. They do a fantastic job. I mean, if you're looking to get better, that's, and you're in Europe, make sure you check them out. And you know, she's moving through this draw. To me, again, another 50-50 match here. Rybakova looks to really have that focus that's necessary at this stage in the event. I'm taking her to make the quarterfinals. What do you have?
Yeah, I mean, very difficult. Can't really disagree with you. So
yes,
she's the informed player. I mean, they're both informed. I don't even know how to say it, but it's Rybakova for me.
Yes, and then we got Coco Vandeweghe and Wozniacki. Could be a good one. I mean, you know, the Dane is playing well this year, but definitely, you know, Coco Vandeweghe, love the demeanor. You know, Pat Cash in her corner, she's pumped up. She really wants to do well. More of that serve and volley influence, which is very absent in the women's game. Let's be honest, there's not too many serve and volleyers right now in women's tennis at all, basically. So I have to give, based on grass court prowess, you would have to definitely go with Coco to go through here and make the quarterfinals. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, Coco was one of my dark horses, I believe.
Yes.
And, she's kicking, alive and kicking and looking okay. She looks like she may have the game here to advance through Wozniacki.
Yes. So now next we got Konju versus Venus Williams. Konju, again, playing really well in the last 12 months. But you have to think that Venus Williams, especially with all of her off-court distractions, currently she's looking at this and saying, listen, you know what? With my sister not here, with everything that I've gone through, playing some great tennis, this got to be my year to win this tournament. And you have to think that Venus, with her draw on hand, you know, you have to get her at least by Konju, and then we'll see what happens after that. But for me, I'm definitely going with her to get past Konju, even maybe even in straight sets, something like 7-5, 6-4. What are your thoughts on that one?
Yeah, I mean, Venus has got a lot to play for, and the solace is the tennis court right now. And
yes,
although things seem to be heading in her direction legally, it's still just a terrible feeling.
Yes.
And, you know, I think she will find her for her range and find her game. And I think she's, going to find the solution is the right words against Konju. And I think she'll be in the quarter.
Okay. And our final three matches, we have Ostapenko. Remember her, Parsa? She just won the French Open. She's got Svitolina, the fourth seed, who, again, nobody gave her a chance of getting this far except for me. And so she is here in the fourth round as a fourth seed against the 13th seed. This is going to be a tough one for me because you have Ostapenko, who's again, still plays with reckless abandon, even though she just won the French Open. You know, then you got Svitolina, who's the fourth seed, number four in the world, had a great year, playing for a lot. She wants to, you know, get to number one. She's very motivated to do so. How does this one unfold, Parsa? I mean, but Ostapenko feeling good, just won, you know, her first major, her first tournament ever. Can she make it two Grand Slams in a row? Who can really say that she can't? right? But you got Svitolina, who's obviously much higher ranked, much more experienced at this stage. This one for me is a complete toss-up. Like, I got to flip a coin to come up with an answer. And I got to stay with Svitolina just based on that slight experience, even though in form, you would have to definitely take Ostapenko. What do you have?
Yeah, I had Ostapenko going through originally. I got to keep going.
Yes.
You know, and I do think that there that winning is a habit, and you find ways, and she proved that in the first couple of rounds, getting through in three sets and finding a way, and then playing so far a decent match against Georgie there. She's going to have to play much better against Svitolina, and I think she'll rise to that occasion, but remains to be seen.
Okay.
Ostapenko for me.
Okay, and then we got the last two matches. We got Konta versus Garcia. Caro Garcia, Konta, I mean, you know, has all the weight of a nation's shoulders on her back from the women's perspective. Sixth seed, playing very well, very mature tennis. Garcia, again, very talented French woman, has coming really coming into her own as of late, continues to rise up the rankings, grass a good service for her. I would say Konta has the better serve of the two in this matchup. Garcia, off the ground, I would say they're pretty equal. Perhaps movement-wise, again, slight edge to Konta. The only thing I can see upending Joanna here is nerves. I mean, if the nerves buckle, you know, get to her there, she buckles under the nerves, then she could, you know, get upended. But otherwise, you got to go with Konta to make the quarters here just based on, you know, the experience and the pedigree on the surface. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, and the home court support too.
Yes,
I think also can help, and so I'm with you there. I've got Konta going through.
Okay, Parson, the last one, which could definitely be the best one. I mean, I'm so proud of Azarenka. I mean, she comes back just with her son Leo at the tournament. She seems super happy. Everything's going in the right direction for her. She's had a great draw in terms of wins. She's had a very tough draw, which she's got through. She's playing amazing tennis. She's got Halep next. I don't know. I mean, it. Could Azarenka get win this tournament? I mean, it's again, very possible. And I think, based on what I'm seeing, I'd like Azarenka to get through this and upset Halep. I mean, what are your thoughts here? I just think that she's got the mojo. She's playing very carefree tennis. Halep still has to, you know, get through that French Open defeat that she, you know, she suffered recently. I don't think grass is her best surface. Neither is it for Azarenka, but I think right now, you know, with her improved technique on her serve and she's moving a little bit better on the surface and she's fresh, I think that Azarenka will be coming in and playing some good tennis and she'll get through this. And what are your thoughts?
I mean, can you believe what she's done? But the excitement is evident, and you know the tennis is there. She's the same. She's improving every match she plays.
Yes.
I think she'll have to be at the top of her game, and I'm not so sure that she's there yet.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's going to be a very difficult matchup for her against Azarenka, against Halep, who can move the ball around, who's quick, who's going to make her play extra shots. But you know, in historically, when Azarenka is Azarenka, you know how you have to beat her is you have to really take it to her, and Halep doesn't have that kind of game to do that. So, I mean, dare I say, I think Azarenka can get through.
Okay, and now we got to go down to who we think will still win this event. Obviously, I only have one of three left in the draw, so I'm going to have to go with Muguruza, Svitolina in the semis. I'm taking our Garbin to move through there, and then I'm going to go with Azarenka, and let me see, Azarenka and... Really not sure, man. I'm gonna go maybe with you with Radwanska to go through there, and then we'll have maybe a Radwanska Muguruza final. I don't believe that can take place. But anyhow, I'm gonna go with Muguruza to take this tournament. What do you have?
Wow, look at that go.
And I'll tell you why after this. Go ahead. You tell me what you have in terms of your final.
Who did I have winning, Ima?
I think you had, again, I don't really know because I just wrote down the semifinal picks here. But I think we both had Kvitova, I believe.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
That's absolutely right.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to go here and go out on a limb and say that something incredible is going to happen. I'm going to have, in the semis, I'll at least have Radwanska versus Coco Vandeweghe.
Okay.
And I think in the semis, in the bottom half, I'm going to have Ostapenko. I think she's going to find a way somehow against Azarenka. So you just kind of have stories galore going on over here.
Yes.
And I think that it's going to be Azarenka that upends Ostapenko. And we're going to have Azarenka in the final against Radwanska. And somehow this is going to... I think I had Radwanska winning, maybe. I don't know who I had winning, but... Interesting to look back, and I have to take a listen to last week's show. But I'm going to have Azarenka holding the trophy here next Saturday.
Okay, Parsa, to end off here, two quick things: one on Joker and one on the women's draw. We'll talk about the women's first. So a lot of the commentators and pundits have been saying, you know, women's tennis has never been this deep and all of this stuff. But this is my question for you. And I'm not trying to be a hater. I'm not trying to be anything like that. But it's a very legitimate argument. In your opinion. With Serena out, we've seen that anything can happen now. There's so much; it's very open. All these tournaments. Is it the depth in women's tennis that's stronger, or is it the lack of dominance without Serena in the field that is allowing for the depth to shine through? You see what I'm saying? So sometimes we see obviously on the men's tour, we would be shocked if somebody outside of the Big Four won the men's tournament this year. That would be absolutely shocking, right? And then subsequently on the women's side, you're saying all 16 women can win this tournament. Well, I mean, that's, you can't get much open than that, as I had mentioned earlier. So my question to you, is it, you know, a lack of dominance, or is it really that deep? My personal opinion is it's a lack of dominance, because how can you have only one player? Serena Williams is almost 36 years old. You know, God bless her. She's awesome. Best athlete ever. But, you know, she's not in action until next year. After, you should be there with her brand new child. But then you look at everybody else, and they can't sustain that type of a level to get to a point where they're actually the favorite. You can say, listen, you know what? You know, with Serena not there or with her there, you know, this person is going to roll. So that's, you know, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I just think it is a lack of the stars being there. You're missing Sharapova, you're missing Azarenka, who's now back. You're missing Serena Williams, and because of that, you're not sort of getting the superstars at the very, very top. And you know, is it a matter of depth? I mean, you know, there is definitely a lot of parity. How about that? I think that's the right word. Is I think it's a little bit more bunched together.
Yes.
In that there's a lot of players close in level, and so if you consider that in your definition to be depth, then yeah, there is more depth. But at the same time, there's a lack of star power at the top, and so there's no one consistently beating everyone else like you have in the men's game, and you could sort of expect to move through. You sort of just never know what's going to happen, and because of that lack of consistency, you know, you sort of see these kinds of things where 16 people can win. And I do think, entertainment-wise, that makes it more valuable to watch. You don't know what's going to happen every match that you go out there. And so if the tennis level is good, then it's amazing for the sport and great for the game, any way you look at it. So hopefully the level matches the depth, and it's not something that it's just a surprise every week because one person can't hit a ball in the court. Instead, it's because of just high-level stuff, and whoever's moving through is playing the best tennis of their life. So I'm sort of took the middle road there, and I kind of just exactly think that way. It's very hard to determine what it is, but the facts are that the superstars are not in the draw. That's the only thing I can tell you.
Yes, and that's a fantastic analysis. And let's end on Joker here, and... You know, Parsa, something that was very interesting, we talked about a little bit earlier this week with John McEnroe coming forward and saying, you know what, you know, Djokovic reminds him a little bit about Tiger Woods and what he had to go through with his, you know, with his family issues and his domestic problems and, you know, obviously, you know, adultery issues that he had with his wife, and now he's divorced, and that really derailed him, and he's never been the same. Very interesting comments because, you know, obviously there's no admission from Djokovic on any of this stuff, which is completely in his right, so we're not accusing anybody of anything, but there has been rumors circulating, obviously, you know, that he was, you know, cheating on his wife and stuff like that. Again, nothing is proven, nothing is factual, it's just, again, rumors. But this is obviously, let's be honest, that's where John McEnroe is gaining this insight from, even though he's not coming out and saying it. And it was interesting to see, you know, Djokovic very astutely, you know, deflecting that, and I thought he handled it extremely well. So that's credit to him. And it's going to be interesting to see how Djokovic rebounds from all of this, because again, whatever happened, happened. You know, only he will know, and we got to respect that. But at the end of the day, it has affected him. There's no question about it, along with some injuries. But you know, he's welcoming with his wife Yelena their second child, so that's an amazing thing, and we hope everything comes together for him. And I think he got the perfect guy at the right time in Agassi to join him, because as we know, Agassi's gone through his own struggles and tribulations throughout his career and his development with, you know, his divorce and all these different things with, you know, abuse and all that stuff, drug abuse. So I think it's a fantastic time for Djokovic to really get in front of whatever issues that he may have had. Again, we don't know exactly. We can only speculate, and that's about it. But again, interesting to see. You know, McEnroe is a character, man. He's saying stuff about Serena and that how she'll be 700 in the world and all this stuff. But he's just trying to sell his book. So that's, you got to keep it at that. And he's a salesman. He's looking, you know, to make money, and that's how he's been throughout his career. So, you know, what, do you have any closing thoughts on that before we end this week's show?
Yeah, I mean, I got in trouble last August in a podcast by all our Twitter followers.
Yes.
I mentioned something similar to McEnroe. I feel like McEnroe's getting off easy, man, compared to what I was
exactly
for.
Yeah.
And I didn't even say it like outright. I just, you know, sort of implied that it may be whatever. And so, I mean, if I'm irresponsible as a journalist, then you know, McEnroe is the most irresponsible person I've ever seen in my whole entire life. He went on national, international TV and made those comments. So
there you go.
You know, let's get out of him. Anyway, but you know, has Djokovic handled everything very, very well? He has, and he looks to be playing well again. And so that's all that really matters. And he looks to be back in form and back to the championship standards that he has upheld throughout his career.
Yes.
And the personal issues aside, it's about the tennis. It's about Wimbledon, and he's doing a great job of making it about the tennis. And so kudos to him.
Exactly. Okay, perfect. So thank you, Parsa, for joining us this week. That was fantastic.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody out there, for listening. Make sure to check back with us in about a week's time when Parsa and I review all of the action from week two, and then we will look forward to the U.S. Open Series as well as the U.S. Open. In the meantime, for anybody looking to get down to any of the hard court action as well as in Montreal, I believe Grand Slam Tennis Tours and Top Notch Tennis Tours has some packages there, as well as for the U.S. Open. Make sure to hit them up. Finally, make sure to check out Parsa at Parsa Sammy, myself at Tennis Connected. You can also follow us on Instagram or Facebook page. Download this podcast on iTunes. Make sure to watch out for articles this week coming up from Ben Stevens, from Charles, from Steve Pigner. We've got a lot of great stuff happening. Thank you so much out there for everybody out there for listening. If you have any questions or comments on this podcast, make sure to hit us up. You know where to find us. And we will chat with you guys in 1 week's time. Make sure to enjoy Manic Monday. Bye. We'll be right back.
Thank you.